Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm going to be reading this week's Big Bend Sentinel. All of the articles that we're reading today from the Big Bend Sentinel were published Wednesday, January 6th, 2021. Upcoming COVID-19 testing dates. A new round of COVID testing is underway across West Texas, bringing the first round of testing in the new year amid the early stages of vaccination against the virus. No symptoms are required to get tested, and the testing team encourages bringing a personal ID, but it is not required. Testing in Alpine took place Tuesday. Testing in Marfa took place Thursday. Here are the other local dates. Fort Davis, Friday, January 8th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Fort Davis Fire Station, 200 Court Avenue. Presidio, Tuesday, January 12th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Presidio Fire Department, 100 East FM 170. Van Horn, Wednesday, January 13th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Van Horn Fire Med Services, 508 East Broadway. In state COVID data, possible signs of hope. The Big Bend region was hit hard by coronavirus late last year, but according to state health data, the situation may be improving. When the Big Bend Sentinel published our final issue in 2020, there were almost 300 active coronavirus cases in the Tri-County. The official tallies of active cases declined through the holiday season, and at press time on Tuesday, there were just more than 100 cases in the Tri-County, a more than 50% reduction. Meanwhile, regional data also suggests that hospitalizations in the regional hospitals are also going down. As usual, there are some big caveats with this data. While active case counts in Brewster County and Jeff Davis County have continued to decline, those in Presidio County have started to creep up again, going from 35 active cases on Monday to 38 on Tuesday. In a social media post on Tuesday, Presidio EMS Director Melinda Richardson said that recent testing in Presidio City had turned up a significant number of COVID-positive residents. Almost a year into the coronavirus crisis, it's still unclear if Texas is providing adequate testing, contact tracing, or other resources to adequately inform Texans on the conditions in their region, particularly in sparsely populated places like Far West Texas. The Tri-County last saw free testing sites in late December, but some residents have not received results, and there were also complaints of inconclusive tests. Both these issues, pending and inconclusive tests, could impact the area's positivity rate. Since Brewster County Health Authority Dr. Ekta Escobar resigned in September, the Big Bend Sentinel has not seen adequate data on metrics like local positivity rates. And the latest batch of state-sponsored testing sites in the region, which started on Wednesday and will continue this week, could well uncover new cases in the Tri-County. Hospital data, which provides a more accurate window on the health of residents, offered a muddled picture. According to the latest data shared by Brewster County on Wednesday, there were 5 daily hospitalizations for coronavirus, a figure that's held steady since around mid-December. On the regional level, though, COVID hospitalizations are declining. The state's Trauma Service Area J, in which the Tri-County sits, reported on December 4th that more than 16% of its hospitalizations were due to coronavirus. On January 4th, the most recent date for which data is available, that figure had fallen to 12.2%. That's still not great, but it's a big improvement, and it's better than most of the state's other 21 trauma service areas. Even with imperfect data, some local officials are seeing signs of hope. At an Alpine City Council meeting on Tuesday, City Manager Eric Zimmer said that while cases and deaths are still going up, the active case counts in this part of the state have gone down a bit. He attributed that to a few factors, including public buy-in for testing and responsible decision-making by residents. Zimmer also pointed to a noteworthy metric out of Alpine. For the first time in months, Solraw State University this week reported 0 active cases on its campus. Some of that, Zimmer acknowledged, was likely because SRSU went all remote last year, and sent most students off campus for the holidays. But even still, he said, it was a great sign that there were no active cases among employees. Health workers get a dose of the Big Ben's newest tool to fight COVID-19, the Moderna vaccine, by Ebi Perrault, published January 6th. In the waning days of 2020, Big Ben medical workers mounted their latest defense against the novel coronavirus. Immunizations in the form of the recently approved Moderna vaccines arrived to preventative care health services on December 23rd. It was Christmas Eve when the first few workers in the Big Bend had received their shots, given to those high-risk frontline workers who would be involved in vaccinating others. By the end of this week, the 400 doses allocated to preventative care health services in Alpine are likely to be completely used up, according to PCHS CEO Linda Molinar, but more is already on the way. Those keeping up with the COVID-19 vaccine allocations across the state of Texas might have noticed Presidio, Brewster, or Jeff Davis counties didn't make the list for week one of vaccine distribution. That initial push of doses in Texas at the end of December was drug maker Pfizer's vaccine, the first drug approved as a vaccine against the viral pandemic that dominated the year 2020. But Pfizer's drug is not well suited for smaller rural areas with fewer resources, according to a DSHS representative who spoke with the Big Bend Sentinel last month. That drug ships in batches of around 1,000 and needs to be stored at nearly 100 degrees below zero Fahrenheit to be effective. Local facilities weren't prepared to keep a product that cold, nor did they have 1,000 eligible recipients lined up that qualified under Phase 1A, even when adding together all the Tri-County's frontline hospital workers, long-term care providers and residents, EMS 911, home health, outpatient, ER, pharmacies, last responders, and school nurses, those the state has determined to be a part of the first wave of vaccinations. It was week two of vaccine distribution when the Tri-County got its first mention. 400 doses of Moderna's vaccine were headed to Alpine, intended to be shared with 1A eligible recipients throughout the Tri-County. Following the handful of Christmas Eve vaccinations, appointments began for local healthcare workers on December 28th, and PCHS Dr. Taylor McCain was eager to get hers. Vaccine production speed has been amazing, McCain remarked in an email earlier this week. Healthcare workers have pulled together in unprecedented ways across the country. But those strides didn't mitigate many effects of COVID-19 to our communities. All that professional pride and excitement has been tempered with heavy doses of disappointment and frustration and grief, McCain wrote. Policies haven't matched the science. Outbreaks have continued to ravage our population, and the death toll has been extreme. Because of that, McCain was thrilled to be a part of the first group, saying she's got the new vaccine for the community, her patients, in memory of those who didn't make it to the day vaccines became available, among other reasons. In a post on social media, she wrote, "It was partly because I believe it's safe, and I want you to know I believe that enough to go first." Individuals receiving the vaccine so far include staff at PCHS, Big Bend Regional Medical Center, Dr. J.P. Schwartz's office, Fort Davis EMS, the prescription shop, Dr. Lukey's office, Marfa Clinic, Big Bend National Park, Presidio EMS, Highland Drug, Sol Ross, Fort Davis Family Practice, Alpine EMS, Alpine Medical Center, Jeff Davis County EMS, and Alpine ISD. And at this point, I'm going to conclude that story, which is fairly long, so we can move on to the next story in the interest of time and getting as many articles in as we can. Two dead, dozens rescued after storm dumps snow on Big Bend, by Beck Andrew Salgado and Stephen Paulson. The Big Bend region, in a typical year, might get one or two light snowfalls a year. But in a fitting end to 2020, the region saw huge amounts of snow and dangerous conditions during a two-day winter storm last week, stranding residents and visitors alike and grinding ordinary life to a halt. Across the Big Bend, law enforcement reported dozens of rescues of stuck or stranded motorists. There were also around a dozen crashes as drivers slid off the road or into other cars. Meanwhile, tragedy struck near Sanderson as Border Patrol recovered the bodies of two migrants who were attempting to cross through rugged terrain when the snowstorm hit. At least 64 migrants were rescued, according to a statement on social media by Customs and Border Protection. The storm, which lasted from last Wednesday through Thursday, dropped snow erratically across the Tri-County. A foot of snow fell in Alpine, compared to an all-time record of 19 inches in 1946. Around a foot of snow also landed at Big Bend National Park, with maybe as high as 2 feet of snow in places high in the Chisos Mountains, said park spokesperson Tom Vanderberg. Elsewhere in the Tri-County, snowfall wasn't as heavy. Marfa saw 3 inches of snow, while Presidio saw just less than an inch. Still, the dangerous conditions prompted closures of major roads in the region, including parts of I-10, U.S. 90, U.S. 67, and U.S. 118. At press time, Customs and Border Protection had not yet provided more information on the stranded migrants, including the identities and nationalities of the two deceased migrants and how many groups of migrants in total were rescued. Greg Davis, an agency spokesperson, said the undocumented migrants were abandoned by smugglers and that some had called the agency for help. Again, in the interest of time, I'm moving on to the next article. Gage lawsuit continues with more filings expected next week by Stephen Paulson. Brewster County. A legal fight is still going on between Brewster County Judge Alizar Cano and J.P. Bryan, the owner of the Gage Hotel in Marathon. Bryan last year sued Brewster County officials and later Cano specifically, arguing his constitutional rights were violated when the county temporarily shuttered hotels as a precaution against the coronavirus pandemic. In a filing last month, David B. Fannin, the U.S. magistrate judge overseeing the case, issued his preliminary findings on the lawsuit. He recommended courts throw out aspects of Bryan's case while allowing other claims to proceed. Neither side was fully satisfied with the opinion, and in a joint court filing days later, lawyers for both Cano and Bryan asked for more time to file objections. Fannin agreed, setting a new filing deadline for next Friday, January 15th. The lawsuit by Bryan, a Houston-based oil man, dates back to the start of the coronavirus crisis. He first sued county officials in April, arguing he was owed up to around $100,000 in damages after mandatory health closures closed the Gage. Bryan's lawsuit made several constitutional claims, arguing his due process rights were violated because hotels, but not other types of businesses like shops, had been forced to close. He also argued that there was no factual or legal basis for the closures because Governor Greg Abbott's emergency orders had not closed hotels and because Brewster County at the time had no coronavirus cases. The lawsuit took aim at Dr. Ekta Escobar, then the local health authority for Brewster County, arguing that the doctor had expressed her personal fears about coronavirus without scientific support and should not be regarded as an expert. Facing backlash from local residents over coronavirus guidance, Dr. Escobar resigned her position as health authority in September. Brewster County has not had a county health authority since. In May, Governor Abbott, who was also facing backlash from business interests, banned local officials from issuing health orders that were stricter than his own, overturning temporary bans on hotels and short-term rentals. Coronavirus cases soon spiked in Brewster County, going from zero in mid-June to well over 100 by July 1st. At press time, more than 800 Brewster County residents have fallen ill with coronavirus. At least 8 county residents have died. In his opinion, Judge Fannin was skeptical of claims made by Bryan's lawyers that Brewster County officials hadn't adequately identified a disaster when they issued emergency orders. Fannin noted there was an ongoing pandemic and argued that Cano had complied with state laws in his efforts to prevent significant loss of life. Fannin agreed with Cano that those aspects of the lawsuit should be dismissed. Fannin was, however, more sympathetic to claims that Cano violated Bryan's constitutional rights when he ordered Bryan's hotel to close. He said Cano had made no arguments to show he wasn't discriminating against business owners with his emergency rules, and therefore that Bryan may have had his equal protection rights violated as a member of a protected class, business owners. He argued that Cano's orders had deprived Bryan of the right to conduct business and that Brewster County's shuttering of the Gage could reasonably be construed as a seizure of property, possibly violating Bryan's 4th and 14th Amendment rights. Fannin recommended that those claims be allowed to proceed in court. That ruling came out on December 16th, and with the holiday season fast approaching then, lawyers for both Bryan and Cano asked for more time to dispute Judge Fannin's opinion. Bryan's lawyer cited Christmas and New Year's and said they would like to be able to meet with family and friends to the extent possible and allowable under local and state orders. Cano's lawyer, J. Eric McGee, also cited the holiday and said he wanted more time to argue that Bryan's constitutional rights were not in fact violated. Judge Fannin agreed to push that filing deadline back to next week. With health workers in the Big Bend already receiving coronavirus vaccines, the pandemic may well end before the lawsuit. After Ponton's termination, Alpine considers new city attorney candidates. What was Rod working on? Alpine City Council member Rick Stevens asked at one point. Mayor, did you ask Rod to go work that? By Stephen Paulson. At an Alpine City Council meeting on Tuesday night, officials considered new candidates for city attorney to replace Rod Ponton, who was dismissed by the city last year. Three candidates have stepped forward, including former district attorney Sandy Wilson. Council also offered more context on Ponton's dismissal, which happened in November after executive session meetings on the issue. Tensions had been simmering between the city and its attorney throughout the year, especially as supporters of both the Alpine Police Department and the Brewster County Sheriff's Office accused each other of misconduct. The details of that dispute are convoluted, as the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, but Alpine City Council was particularly upset with one thread in that controversy. In public documents, including a letter to city officials, Ponton had accused Alpine Police Department of a repeated pattern of police misconduct, including arresting people without cause. Council asked Ponton to provide evidence for his claims, and at a city council meeting in November, Ponton gave a brief presentation. He said that Brewster County prosecutors had declined more than 43% of APD cases due to probable cause issues, indicating the police department was performing more poorly than other agencies like the Brewster County Sheriff's Office and the Texas Department of Public Safety. He said his claims were backed up by the data and recommend there be some more training for APD on case preparation and legal issues. Council wasn't impressed. Council member Rick Stevens asked whether Ponton had asked Brewster County Attorney Steve Houston to attend a city meeting so that city officials could hear his take on these concerns. Ponton said he had not. Why have you not done that? Stevens said. You were asked to do that at the last meeting. Steve Houston is an elected public official, Ponton replied. I think he can do whatever he wants to do in his office. Meanwhile, other city officials were concerned that Ponton was still not providing adequate evidence for his claims. It's a pretty pie chart, city manager Eric Zimmer said of a graph showing why APD cases were dismissed. But there's no data. After multiple records requests with APD and county offices, including a records request with the Brewster County Attorney's Office on dismissed APD cases, the Big Bend Sentinel has so far found no concrete evidence of widespread misconduct at APD. On one hand, Ponton's presentation, if accurate, does show that APD cases were dismissed at a much higher rate than cases from other agencies. On the other hand, dismissed cases do not necessarily indicate misconduct or probable cause violations, especially in the light of the feud between city and county officials. Chris Rodriguez, an Alpine City Council member and former employee at the District Attorney's Office, instead argued that county prosecutors weren't doing enough to make sure APD cases were ready for court. At the same meeting in November, Council member Maria Curry introduced a motion to terminate Ponton's contract effective immediately. There was a significant lack of trust between Ponton and other city officials, she said. Council voted 4-1 to fire Ponton, with council member Martin Sandit voting against. For some council members, Ponton's presentation seemed to confirm their worst suspicions. As Stevens put it at last week's meeting, there appeared to be a conflict of interest. Ponton wanted to rationalize why APD was wrong in what they were doing, rather than helping the city understand what its risks were, he said. In my opinion, he created a bigger risk for the city. Another issue concerned Ponton's billing practices. As city council reviewed Ponton's final bill at last week's meeting, they questioned some of the charges on his invoice. What was Rod working on? Stevens said of one charge concerning research into candidate eligibility, which ostensibly was done for Mayor Andy Ramos. Mayor, did you ask Rod to go work on that? Ramos said he had not, but sometimes, he said, he asked Ponton a question and was later charged for research. Just discussing it doesn't mean, hey, that automatically gives you the right to go do all this research, Ramos said. Reached for comment on Wednesday, Ponton maintained there were problems at APD and that he was just doing his job. I was trying to reduce risk for the city by exposing Alpine Police Department arrests without probable cause so that the Alpine Police Department could reform itself and make sure that citizens' rights were not violated, he said. I wanted to improve their performance. Asked about concerns about his bills, Ponton again argued he was doing his due diligence. I don't want to give an off-the-cuff answer to something, he said. I want to make sure I'm correct in the advice that I give my client. Still, Ponton and City Council seemed to agree on one thing. The partnership wasn't working out. It improved my life, Ponton said of the City Council's decision to terminate him. He hadn't seen eye to eye with other city officials, particularly Stevens, he said. At last week's City Council meeting, city leaders also briefly discussed the three candidates who have applied to replace Ponton in that role. While city officials are still deciding who they will hire, those discussions provided a window into their thinking. First up is former District Attorney Sandy Wilson, who lost her bid in the Republican primary last year to Ori White, a Fort Stockton-based lawyer. White was sworn in on Monday. Wilson, a Marathon resident, has long ties to the area. But Mayor Ramos, while noting that Wilson had a background in criminal law and nursing, said that the city attorney would primarily handle city contracts. That's a little different to what she's used to, he said. Next up was Denise Frederick, who at the meeting told council she has tons of city experience. Frederick was an assistant city attorney in San Antonio for more than 20 years, from 1995 to 2016, according to her online resume. Later, she also worked for around 3 years as city attorney for the San Antonio suburb of Leon Valley. Frederick said she had dealt with every aspect of city government, from zoning to prosecuting minor misdemeanors. But Frederick acknowledged that she didn't have lawsuit experience, meaning Alpine would likely have to outsource and pay for those tasks. I don't want to give you the impression that's in my wheelhouse when it's not, Frederick said at the meeting. I'm just being honest with you. Finally, there's Greg Wortham, a former mayor of Sweetwater. Taking office in 2007, Wortham left office in 2014 to run as a Democratic candidate in a special election in Texas State Senate District 28. He lost that bid to a Republican. Wortham, who was also present, said little at the meeting, but according to his online resume, he has experience with both the oil and gas and wind industries. Starting in 2004, Wortham ran the Texas Wind Energy Clearinghouse, a group that served as a resource and information exchange for the wind industry, according to its Facebook page. The group's website is no longer active, and its Facebook page hasn't posted since 2017. The Sierra Club, a U.S. environmental group, wrote a glowing profile of Wortham in 2014, describing him as the mayor of wind. Later, starting in 2013, Wortham also headed the Klein Shale Alliance, a private group founded to prepare the Sweetwater region for the oil workers, according to the Austin American-Statesman. After brief remarks from some of the candidates, the council voted to table the vote to replace Ponton to give them time to discuss and learn more, so no hiring decision was made Tuesday night. Ori White, sworn in as district attorney. Ori White was sworn in as the local district attorney at a masked ceremony in Presidio County Courthouse on Monday. Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara presided over the ceremony. Joining the district attorney's office are Jerry Phillips as first assistant district attorney, Tim Crowley, Marisol Skelton, and Rod Ponton as assistant district attorneys, and Letty Carrillo as DA investigator. Both Crowley and Ponton will be working as assistant district attorneys on a pro bono basis and will primarily focus on Presidio and Jeff Davis counties, Ponton said in a brief phone interview this week. Ponton also previously served as the district attorney. White, a Fort Stockton-based lawyer, was the 112th district attorney in West Texas from 1997 to 2004. He grew up in Marfa and has had family in the region since at least the time of his great-grandfather. As a Presidio County native, he looks forward to serving this region, a news release about his swearing-in stated. White ran last March in the Republican primaries and defeated Republican DA incumbent Sandy Wilson, who was elected to the office in 2016. With no Democratic challengers, that victory essentially guaranteed him a win in the general elections in November. In a roughly hour-long interview with the Big Bend Sentinel after his primary win, White outlined his priorities for office, including cracking down on methamphetamine and ensuring victims were involved in criminal proceedings. I look forward to putting both feet into the 83rd DA's office so I can give it my best, White said in that phone interview from last year. Really, in my view, I'm going to have the best job in the world. Finally, I'm going to read just a very brief portion of this last article. COVID-19 economic injury disaster loan application deadline extended to end of 2021. The U.S. Small Business Administration today announced that the deadline to apply for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, EIDL, program for the COVID-19 pandemic disaster declaration is extended to December 31st, 2021. The deadline extension comes as a result of the recent bipartisan COVID-19 relief bill passed by Congress and enacted by President Trump on December 27, 2020. To date, the SBA has approved $197 billion in low-interest loans, which provide working capital funds for small businesses, nonprofits, and agricultural businesses to make it through this challenging time. And then at the very bottom of the page, it says, to learn more, visit www.sba.gov.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer, dated Thursday, December 31st, 2020. King honored for 40 years of service. PCHC presents plaque to PC Constable Monique Bowles, special to the Pioneer. William King is a lifelong resident of Pecos County who has served the citizens in the area for over 40 years. He worked for Warren Petroleum and as a rancher before winning the election for Pecos County Constable for Precinct 4 on November 4, 1980. King was sworn into office January 1, 1981, and over the next several years he continued his ranching and petroleum jobs, eventually retiring from them so he could devote all of his time to the residents of Imperial. All good things must come to an end, though, and on December 31, 2020, he retired after serving 40 years in the position. This past October, King was recognized by the Pecos County Hospital Commission with a plaque for 40 years of service. At present, he is the third longest active constable in the state of Texas. He also holds the honorable achievement of being the longest serving elected official in Pecos County. His family consists of his wife of nearly 59 years, Sherian, their daughter Monique Bowles, their grandson Chet Bowles and wife Kara, great-grandson Camden and great-great-grandson Stetson, who will arrive in March 2021. Thank you for your devoted service to the people of Pecos County. Cood elected to TFB Board of Directors. Pecos County rancher Warren Cood has been elected a state director of Texas Farm Bureau, the state's largest general farm and ranch organization. Cood was elected state director for District 12 at TFB's 87th annual meeting in Waco on December 5th. He was elected by TFB voting delegates to a two-year term. Cood has a commercial cow-calf operation and raises registered and commercial sheep. He also operates a helicopter service for livestock gathering and predation management with his son. Cood previously served as president and vice president of Pecos Reeves County Farm Bureau. He has participated in TFB's farm lead and also served on TFB's sheep and goat, animal health, and predator advisory committees, as well as the state resolution committee. He and his wife have one son and daughter-in-law and two grandchildren. Coode succeeds Val Stevens of Lamesa as state director for District 6. Stevens served as TFB Secretary Treasurer in 2020 before retiring after 6 years on the board of directors. TFB represents over 533,000 member families. Next phase of COVID-19 vaccine begins in Pecos County. Phase 1B of the Moderna COVID-19 administration in Pecos County began on Tuesday, December 29th at Pecos County Memorial Hospital. The phase includes individuals that are 65 years old and older that have at least one chronic condition that puts them at a higher risk for severe illness from the virus. Those conditions are, but not limited to, cancer, chronic kidney disease, chronic obstruction pulmonary disease, heart conditions such as heart failure, coronary artery disease, and cardiomyopathies, solid organ transplantation, sickle cell disease. Previously, only healthcare workers and first responders who worked in Pecos County were able to get the vaccine. The first set of vaccines for healthcare workers and first responders in the county began on December 21st. By lunchtime on Tuesday, PCMH had given 100 vaccines to those who were 65 years and older and had at least one chronic condition. PCMH started the day with 300 vaccines available. Risco added that the hospital will administer them until they run out. As of Tuesday, the hospital does not know when they will receive their next shipment of vaccines or when the next phase of vaccine administration will begin. Risco shared insight on what she knew of the as of Tuesday evening. That's something they are actually meeting on tomorrow to determine when the next phase is. What determines our allocation is the number of shots we've given. Then that information is transmitted to the federal government, who makes sure we have enough to revaccinate those people. The vaccine is free of charge and does not require insurance, but those who receive the shot must be residents of the county. Photo identification is required. Right now it's free. We cannot charge for the vaccine or the supplies. We could charge an administration fee to basically cover the nurse cost of giving it, but we're not doing that right now. It's free. Come on in, fill out the paperwork, and get the shot. Those who meet the criteria of Phase 1B and live in the county are asked to call 432-336-2058 to make an appointment with the hospital's Family Care Center between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Walk-ins will not be accepted. Individuals who receive the shot are strongly recommended to set up an appointment for their second, which is necessary to make the vaccine effective after receiving the first dose at the hospital. Brisco said that the patient can go up to 30 days between shots, but 28 days is recommended. The CEO also stated on Tuesday, December 29th, that she or anyone that works at the hospital had not heard of anyone having side effects from this vaccine, besides the usual sore arm from receiving the shot. Hodges ready for second go on the city council. Making Fort Stockton a better place for its citizens is the short-term and long-term has long been a priority for Darren Hodges' life. The Fort Stockton native began his first term on the Fort Stockton City Council in 2009 and served two additional terms before stepping away from his seat in 2015. This past election, Hodges ran once again for a city council seat with the same purpose he had in mind in his first go-around. The former councilman received by far the most votes, 1,636, out of all the candidates who were running to earn a seat on the council for a fourth term. The vote count was more than 500 votes higher than the candidate who received the second highest vote. I like Fort Stockton, and I wanted to be involved in making it better, which is pretty much the same place I'm at right now. I want us to grow the right way. Nothing happens by accident. You've got to plan for it. Because if you don't plan for it, it's going to happen wrong. If we do a better job, people will want to come and be in Fort Stockton schools and the city and the county of Pecos. Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander noted that Hodges' previous experience on the council and in the community is invaluable to the city of Fort Stockton. His experience is a great thing to have on the board. Darren has served a lot of different committees in town, so he knows a lot of the stuff going on. He's been on the school board, brings that relationship to the council. He's a great resource. He's a businessman, so that's always good to have. The 61-year-old, who will turn 62 on January 8th, grew up with the interest in politics, being the student council president in high school, and going on to join the Fort Stockton Independent School Board for 3 years in the early 2000s. I've always enjoyed being in the political part of it, or at least working in that kind of environment. So I was the junior class president and school president on student council. I just wanted to find out what was going on at the school and be involved in the decision-making and the direction of the school at the time. The best way to do that is run for school board. After I got off the school board a few years later, I decided to run for city council. Growing up, Hodges had a positive political influence from his father, Delman, who started the Hodges Oil Company in 1970 and has owned the Fort Stockton business since. Darren and his dad worked together for a combined 23 years since he graduated from Fort Stockton High School. Delman was also the first Republican elected in the county, serving as a county judge. He really got the Republican Party going here. He was the chair, Darren said. That was part of the politics. We enjoy politics. After Darren graduated from high school, he went on to get his bachelor's degree in psychology from Abilene Christian University before returning to work under his father for 8 years until oil prices crashed in the late 80s. The turn of events sent Darren a different career path for 10-year span. Darren started working to earn his master's degree in psychology at Texas State University while becoming the clinic director at what is now known as Permian Basin Community Centers for Mental Health, Mental Retardation. Darren worked one year at the clinic in Midland before serving the clinic director in Fort Stockton. Once the oil market rebounded, Darren rejoined his father 15 years ago, becoming the company's vice president. Delman and his son have worked together ever since. Moving forward, Darren hopes to continue to work for his father for many years to come while making a positive impact in the community of Fort Stockton. I think Fort Stockton is really blessed. We're on the interstate. That means a ton. There's a million-dollar location being on I-10 where we're at. From El Paso to Kerrville, we're really the biggest city for 500 miles, Darren said. We have lots of water, oil, gas, wind, solar. It's a giant county, the second largest in Texas. We have a lot of advantages, and I just want to make sure we're aware of what's going on and try to stay ahead of the curve. Active cases reach new one-day high in the county. The number of active COVID-19 cases in Pecos County reached an all-time high on Tuesday, December 29th, with 88 active cases being reported. The previous high was set on December 11th at 87, which was also the number of active cases reported on Monday, December 28th. Active cases have maintained above 70 people in Pecos County for 18 of the past 19 days. Hospitalization numbers in the county continue to stay relatively high, along with active case numbers. As of Tuesday, there were 12 Pecos County residents hospitalized due to COVID-19 at Pecos County Memorial Hospital, and 14 additional residents hospitalized statewide, putting the total hospitalization number at 26 for the county. The 12 hospitalized COVID patients at PCMH puts the facility at 75% capacity, as the hospital can have up to 16 COVID patients at one time. The death total in the county has stayed at 23 since November 23rd, marking no deaths in the past 5 weeks. Luciano Chano Gomez Rascon, 85, of Fort Stockton, died Friday, December 25th, in Odessa. He was born on January 7th, 1935, in Fort Stockton to Laborio and Estefana Rascon. Brenda Davison entered rest on December 26th, 2020. She was born on December 18th, 1938. Visitation was held on December 30th at Heritage Funeral Home, and the funeral service was at 2 p.m. on December 30th at East Hill Cemetery. John Harvey Johnny Moore, Jr. of Bloomfield, New Mexico, went home to his Heavenly Father on December 18th at the age of 73. Due to the coronavirus, a private family mass was held in Balmoray on Tuesday the 29th, and public graveside service at the Balmoray Cemetery at 11 a.m. Stephen Wayne Phillips took his last breath of life on this earth on December 20th in Marble Falls, Texas. There will be a celebration of Steve's life on January 9th at the Ward County Coliseum in Monahans. Mary Bueno Carrasco, aged 85, passed away peacefully December 18th. Memorial services will be announced later by the family. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Pablo Primera entered rest on December 24th. He was born on July 19th, 1934. The visitation was held on December 30th at Heritage Funeral Home. The service was on December 31st at Our Lady of Guadalupe downtown campus. Burial followed at St. Joseph Cemetery. Panthers dropped first game back from break, 74-46. Sweetwater senior Darian Carr and the Mustangs proved to be a difficult challenge for the Fort Stockton boys basketball team, first game back from winter break on Tuesday, December 29th at the Special Events Center. Carr dropped a season-high 28 points, including 6 3-pointers, in the Mustangs' 74-46 win. They're a quality program, Fort Stockton head coach Jimmy Martinez said. Third quarters have haunted the Panthers for a majority of the season thus far, and that proved to be the case again on Tuesday. Sweetwater, 7-3, outscored the Panthers 26-7 in the third frame, extending their lead to 56-27 after a competitive first half. Only 3 Mustangs scored in the third quarter, led by Carr's 11 points and 3 3-pointers in the frame. Tim Thompson recorded 8 of his 17 points in the third quarter, while Harrison Foster added 7 of his 13 coming out of the break. I think we came out a little slow in the third quarter. The third quarter had been a problem for the whole season, trying to find different ways to try to fix and maybe come out with some more energy, but that wasn't the case today. Fort Stockton went toe-to-toe with the Mustangs in the first 16 minutes of play. The Panthers trailed by only 1, 12-11, after the first quarter and 30-20 at halftime. Caleb Garcia scored a team-best 5 points in the first quarter. Devin Rodriguez, Ethan Acosta, and Christian Morales finished the first 8 minutes of play with 2 points apiece. Fort Stockton's record fell to 2-9 with the loss and is their 7th consecutive defeat dating back to December 11th. The Panthers' next game will be in Alpine on Thursday.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, December 31st. Nelms steps down as fire chief. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Quote, I'm not retiring from everything, and it's not a final goodbye. More like a step back. I just can't do it all anymore, Fire Chief Eddie Nelm said during an interview Tuesday. Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department longtime Fire Chief Eddie Nelms has resigned, but will remain active in the fire department for the time being, he announced earlier this week. Nelms has served with the Volunteer Fire Department for 12 and a half years and served as assistant chief until becoming chief 4 years ago. Eddie submitted his retirement from fire service to the city and informed the department Monday night at its regular meeting. Along with his busy full-time job serving as a county commissioner for Precinct 4, Nelms has an enormous responsibility as fire chief. Quote, the city has grown so much, and there are so many more calls now, it was becoming more like a full-time job. I want to be able to spend more time with my family and focus more on my county job. I am hurting over this decision, but for me and my family, it is the right call to make, Nelm said. Members of the fire department will elect new officers among themselves in the next few weeks, which will then be sent to the city council to ratify the election. Quote, Eddie will remain chief until a replacement is made and will remain a source for information and advice as the city moves forward, assessing the future needs and direction of the volunteer fire department, City Manager Rex Thee said. Quote, I'll do whatever the city and council ask of me, and I'll always be around to support the fire department in whatever they need. That will never change. I love the guys on this department, and it has been my biggest honor to be their chief, he added. Nelms doesn't want the citizens of Monahans and the counties to worry because, quote, the fire department is strong, end quote. Quote, we have an excellent department. Our guys are well trained. We have top of the line equipment, and the city and county are well protected, end quote. As to the question of restructuring the fire department or making the chief position a paid full-time position, Thee said, quote, more and more requirements for training, reporting, personnel and equipment certifications, depositions requested for private persons' tort claims, and etc., have and are being placed on volunteer fire departments in Texas. The city will take all these things under advisement and consideration of leadership in our fire department, end quote. Thee added, quote, Eddie did a great job as chief and helped the city and county tremendously with the specifications and procurement of the two fire trucks. He also obtained numerous grants for equipment and brush fighting trucks and equipment. We thank him for his service and will miss his leadership at the department, end quote. Homeowner catches burglar in the act, holds her until cops arrive. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A homeowner caught a suspected burglar in the act and pinned her down until police arrived last Sunday afternoon. Monahans Police Department Corporal Kevin Macias responded to 1500 South Alice in reference to a burglary Sunday, December 27th, around 1:28 p.m. Quote, when Officer Macias arrived, the homeowner, Wanda Meeks, had the suspect, Stephanie Ditto, age 33, of Monahans, pinned down on the floor, MPD Captain Christopher Quintana said. Meeks told officers Ditto entered the front door of her Alice Street home and was, quote, attempting to steal property from the home when she caught her in the act. Meeks then tackled her and pinned her down while she waited for officers to arrive, Quintana added. Ditto was subsequently arrested and charged with burglary of a habitation, a second-degree felony. No bond was set as of press time, and Ditto still remained in custody at the Ward County Jail. If convicted, Ditto could face 2 to 20 years in a Texas Department of Criminal Justice facility. Local family displaced after house catches fire Sunday. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Just 2 days after Christmas, a Monahan's family's home caught fire and destroyed the home and all of their belongings. Texas Department of Public Safety Trooper David Moya and his family, including 4 children, ages 3, 4, 15, and 16, have been staying with family in Pecos since the fire. Trooper Moya has been working in the area for over 10 years. Monahan's volunteer fire department was dispatched to a report of a house fire in the 900 block of North Carroll early Sunday morning around 5 a.m. The fire, which is believed to have been electrical in nature, began in the back of the house on the bottom floor and had engulfed the whole home by the time first responding officers and firefighters arrived on scene. Quote, the fire was massive. The windows started blowing out and the flames were just rolling. It happened so quick, Monahan's volunteer fire department chief Eddie Nelm said. Quote, there was not much we could do in the way of trying to save anything. At that point, all we could do was contain the fire and prevent it from spreading to neighboring homes, he added. The department used the biggest attack hoses they had, which allowed them to put a lot of water on the fire quickly, but did take longer to contain. Quote, we used the new deck gun on the rescue fire truck for the first time, and we were able to put out a tremendous amount of water through the windows on the fire really quickly, which knocked down the big flames pretty fast. It took a little longer to get it out just because it is a 2-story house, and we needed to make sure it was safe to send guys inside, he added. A GoFundMe account and a Facebook fundraiser have been set up for the family and is beginning gathering donations to help the family get back on their feet. Quote, Between the smoke and water damage, the fire pretty much took everything in there. Thankfully, the family was not home when the fire began, he said. Donations of toiletries, clothing items, or household items can also be dropped off at 3600 South Stockton in Justice of the Peace Danny Bustos' office. The fire is currently under investigation, and Naum said the house was a total loss. COVID-19 vaccine started. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. COVID-19 vaccinations have started rolling out in Ward County. Medical Center Hospital allocated 30 inoculations to frontline workers of Ward Memorial Hospital. Additionally, Monahan's Pharmacy was set to finish distribution of 100 shots of the Moderna vaccine on Wednesday to mostly first responders in the county, a spokesman at the pharmacy said. No details were available as to when additional vaccines would be received. As of Wednesday morning, Ward County had 82 active cases, 487 confirmed cases, 268 probable, 664 recovered, and 9 deaths, with 24 newly confirmed cases in the last 14 days. County Judge Greg Holly explained, quote, "In today's numbers, the state has removed 29 cases from our confirmed case count. That, together with some recoveries, brought our active cases down to 82. I'm guessing these were cases wrongly assigned to us that have been removed, but honestly, who really knows?" End quote. Holly also updated vaccine status and allocations. Quote, "You've probably seen reports on vaccine distribution and availability. Yesterday afternoon, I participated in a lengthy statewide conference call with DSHS and TDEM and have the following to report. Vaccine information can be found on the DSHS website by clicking here. This link has been added to the post pinned to the top of this page. Vaccines are being allocated to states on a weekly basis. The weekly allocation to Texas fluctuates, but should be increasing rapidly in coming weeks. Texas then allocates vaccines to providers across the state. In Ward County, the Monahan's Pharmacy is the current local provider receiving vaccines. As vaccine doses are initially limited, the state has established priority groups. Phase 1A are the top priority and include frontline healthcare workers. Phase 1B are all persons over 65 years of age, as well as persons 16 to 64 years of age who have chronic underlying health conditions," end quote. Further details can be found on Holly's Facebook page, Ward County COVID-19 Updates. Across the state, there are now 287,000 active cases, 1.5 million confirmed, 197,000 probable, and 26,762 deaths. Commissioners renew air ambulance. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward County Commissioners renewed the air ambulance service with Air Medcare for 2021. The agreement will enter its eighth year with the county. Cost of the agreement for the coming year, which will run from April 2021 until April 2022, will be $68,620. Price for the past 3 years had been $57,183. Any individual who resides within the boundaries of Ward County when transported for medical necessity by MedTrans Incorporated or any Air Medcare network provider will be covered. Transport must be from a pickup location in Ward County. For the benefit of residents in the western part of the county, individuals will be picked up from Reeves County Hospital in Pecos. Additional coverage is available for county residents to cover individuals and families that will provide transport for medically necessary anywhere serviced by AirMed Care. Cost for the optional coverage is $45 for families and $35 for seniors over the age of 60. The company will bill the covered individual's insurance directly without additional cost to the individual. If the covered individual transported does not have health insurance at the time of transport, MedTrans will bill the covered individual at the Medicare allowable rate for the transport. Quote, "This is one of the best things we do for our citizens," Commissioner Eddie Nelms said. In addition to Nelms, Commissioners Larry Hanna and Dexter Nichols were present for Monday's regular meeting. County Judge Greg Holly was also in attendance. Commissioner Tino Sanchez was not present. In other actions, commissioners approved two attendance exception requests for upcoming events at the Ward County Event Center. In an earlier meeting, maximum attendance guidelines were set for county facilities. Maximum attendance for the event center and arena was set at 200, the Coliseum was set at 50, and smaller community centers in Barstow, Wickett, Grand Falls, and Pyote was set at 25. Five arrested after call of stolen vehicle leads to drug bust. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Five people were arrested Monday morning after the Ward County Sheriff's Office served a search warrant at a home located in the 3700 block of South Fay. Ward County Sheriff Freran Valle said they executed a search warrant at the residence around 11:30 a.m. and seized approximately 26.2 grams of a substance believed to be methamphetamine, as well as stolen property. Around 7:50 a.m., a call came into the Ward County Sheriff's Office dispatch in reference to a stolen vehicle. Quote, the caller stated a 2015 Ford flatbed truck was seen leaving Hulk Oilfield Services located in the 1700 block of West 31st Street, Valle said. The vehicle was identified as belonging to Hulk Oilfield Services. Quote, the caller was following the vehicle and relaying the information to the dispatch. The caller said the vehicle was abandoned in the alley in between the 3700 block of South Eva and South Fay, and two males were seen exiting the vehicle and ran into the residence located at 3704 South Fay, Valle said. Around 11:30 a.m., Ward County Sheriff's Office deputies executed a search warrant at the residence. Quote, during the execution of the search warrant, approximately 26.2 grams of a substance believed to be methamphetamine and items that were identified as stolen from a burglary and theft that occurred at Hulk Oilfield Services were located, he said. Dwayne Martin, age 37, of 1502 South Kenneth, Darren Escamilla, age 21, of 1201 South James, and Tracy Hernandez, age 25, of 4303 South Yvonne, were charged with possession of controlled substance, a second-degree felony. Derek Watkins, age 29, of 1107 South Veronica, was charged with possession of controlled substance, a third-degree felony. Tyler Spencer, age 20, of 102 West 3rd in Wickett, was charged with theft of property, a state jail felony. All subjects were booked into the Ward County Jail. The incident is still under investigation. As of press time, the five alleged suspects remained in custody and had yet to see a judge to set bond.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.